it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back. Time for Toker Talk Radio. The phone lines are open at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565. We are live from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. And I hope you'll excuse me for just a second. I need to take a puff off a joint. Give me just a moment. Oh, much better. All right. So, yeah, I had to take a little relaxing hit because that last interview, whoo, I knew going into it I was going to get some emotions stirred up. Not the least of which because, you know, I've been to jail. And that was the question I didn't ask. I was going to ask the guy if he'd ever been to jail. But I've been to jail and I've sat in that cement room with the plexiglass and waited for 6 hours to be able to. And that's presumed innocent, sitting in a jail for 6 hours trying to raise the bail money to get me out. Because this is another thing we didn't discuss in that whole commercial for-profit bail bond industry kind of thing, is it's not like an obligation. It's not like they have to offer this service to you. If you're an out-of-state driver like I was, you can't get a bail bondsman to put up the bond for you. So I didn't have to come up with $116. I had to come up with $1,167 on the spot, or I would have been sitting in that Utah jail until I could, or until my arraignment. And as I said, the average stay in jail for people that get busted, that can't make bail and then have to wait for an arraignment, is 21 days. 3 weeks. As it was, the 6 hours I spent there threw off my travel schedule to get to a very important event. 3 weeks in jail? I'd have missed the event entirely in the next couple. And that's the thing that's really troublesome about this discussion. And that's why I wanted to front load the interview with the statistics to try to set the stage here, man. 750,000 people at any one time. 60 to 70% of them never get convicted. This costs us $9 billion a year to keep innocent people, again, presumed innocent, in jail because they can't make bail. And in jails last year, there were 800 fatalities in jails. Some of those people who were innocent until proven guilty, like Sandra Bland. We told you the story of Sandra Bland, the Texas woman, pulled over, got into a kind of a discussion with the officer on the side of the road, who then handcuffs her and takes her to jail. She has to make a $5,000 bail. She could get a bail bondsman for $500. She couldn't come up with the $500. And over the weekend, they find her dead in the jail because she couldn't come up with $500. We told you the story of Mark Goodrum. Mark Goodrum, the man who was busted in Virginia off of a tip that he was smoking pot in his own house. He was charged with that, failed to appear for that, got warrants out for him. After they caught him, they put him in jail. His bail, he needed to come up with $100. $100 to get out of jail, couldn't come up with it, had a stroke, died in the jail. This industry is a $2 billion industry. $2 billion, and it only exists in the U.S. and the Philippines. It's like the U.S. and the Philippines are the only countries that have for-profit bail. The U.S. and New Zealand are the only countries that have direct-to-consumer TV advertising from pharmaceutical companies. You know, I'm kind of tired of being one or two of the only countries that do something incredibly stupid. Like one of the only two countries or three countries that have for-profit healthcare systems. Ugh. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more from Dragonfly De La Luz. She's doubling down on her yellow journalism. We'll be right back.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Growing green to generate more green.
Talking with multi-cup award winner Maya Elizabeth.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman.
I've always followed Whoopi, and I think she's fantastic. I've followed her advocacy over the years. Tell me a little bit how you think partnering with a mainstream high-profile figure actually benefits the cannabis community as a whole.
I have infinite respect for Whoopi Goldberg. I wouldn't just partner with any into that kind of thing. I'm into cannabis medicine, and I'm into making quality products that people can find relief from. So to hear that her vision was actually the same, it's been beyond a dream to manifest.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh, my goodness. I was going to move on to Dragonfly, but I can't stop thinking about this cash bail thing. I'm going to go on this just a little longer. Quick reminder that our phone line is open at 650-LEGAL-MJ. If you've got anything to add to this discussion on bail. One of the problems I had during the discussion, right, he asserted that it was the most efficient way to make sure people appear for their court dates. And okay, right, so the idea here is that without the cash bail, people would get arrested, charged with something, and then when their court date comes up, they wouldn't show. And then, it would lead to havoc in the criminal justice system. It would be an end to our speedy and efficient, I almost made it through that without laughing, our speedy and efficient legal system. Here's my problem with that thinking, okay? First of all, I think it's highly suspect, this stat of his, this idea that cash bail works better than the other options. Because here in Multnomah County, we've reduced the amount of cash bail that is used in our system. Again, Oregon's one of the four states that doesn't allow for-profit bail bondsmen. And in Multnomah County, specifically here in Portland, they've significantly reduced the types of cases in which they will use the cash bail system. Instead, they've moved on to using release people on their own recognizance. That's the one where you say you were bad, show up to court. And really, for, you know, most smaller offenses, I think that's probably going to be fine, because the failure to appear that you would get and the arrest warrant for the failure to appear for most people at a low level is scarier and is more damaging than what they would suffer from going to court in the first place. So there's incentive to go to court because it's less punishing than the failure to appear. But there's also pretrial supervision. There's also close street supervision. This is more where they're surveilling you. They're coming by and talking to you every now and then, checking up on you. And then, of course, the electronic ankle bracelets that we, you know, see in the crime shows, right? I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. We are paying $9 billion a year in tax costs to hold 750,000 people at any one time. 60 to 70% of them never convicted. Innocent people, well, 100% innocent, because they're innocent until proven guilty while we're holding them. But 60 to 70% of them never end up being convicted is what I'm saying. So 750,000 people, $9 billion. You're telling me that we couldn't have spent that $9 billion on 750,000 ankle monitors and it wouldn't have been cheaper and it wouldn't be more effective at getting people to go to court? Sorry, it doesn't pass the sniff test to me. It doesn't really sound right to me. What does sound right to me is that there's money involved. And the whole point of the cash bail system is kind of like what they do when they offer you rebates on a item that you purchase, right? You go to the Home Depot, you go to the Office Depot, whatever. You buy a new printer or refrigerator or whatever it might be. They say, yeah, it's $800 with a $90 mail-in rebate, right? You get all excited. Oh, 90 bucks off. You buy that fridge and you take it home and you unpack it and you throw the paperwork over there and you never look at it again. And of course, you forget to mail in the rebate. And they know that. They're counting on that. They know that very few people, a small percentage, will actually mail in the rebate. And so they get the benefit of advertising this great cost saving to you, but they don't really have to give you that much cost saving. Well, that's what the bail system is, in a sense. The cash bail system is, we know that once we get this money out of you, the likelihood that we'll be keeping it is much greater than you getting it back. That's what it's all about. When I did my stint in Utah, got busted because left in my laptop case by my assistant at the time was a vapor pen that was empty as far as practical use goes, but still had the residue, the tiny residue of cannabis oil in it. For that, I got a charge of possession and a charge of paraphernalia, and the bail was $1,167. Now, I got that bail paid in full by my friend and got out of jail. And 6 months later, I got a letter from Utah that said, okay, well, we're dropping the charges. And here's your check. They mailed back the check for $1,167. Great. So I got this, my $1,167 back. There's no more charge over my head. Great. Put the money in the bank, invest it in some stuff for the show, pay some of the flight costs, etc. And at the end of the year, I get another letter back around November. This is 2014. That says, oh, by the way, we decided to reinstate the charges. Okay, thanks. So they reinstated the charges. I got myself a lawyer. Lawyer negotiated with the court. And the court settled. The court settled. They'd said, as long as I would accept a delayed plea, conditional plea, one of those things where you say you're guilty, but if you are good and you do everything right, they will pretend like you never said you were guilty and the whole case goes away. I don't remember what the technical term is. But the condition was that I make that plea that would be erased if I was good. And what the definition of being good was is, number one, don't get busted for weed. Okay, no problem. I'll stay in Oregon. And number two, pay $100 a month to the county in, I don't know what it was, fines, court costs, restitution, tax, title, dealer, dock fee. The fuck I know what it was. It was just some fee. And interesting, isn't it, that they had me do that $100 a month for 12 months. Let's see, 12 times 100 is $1,200, virtually the same $1,167 that they sent back to me that was my bail money. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that mighty coincidental that the fees and the costs and the fines just happened to add up to about the same amount of money that I had given them in the bail amount in the first place? So yeah, I was a little perturbed on this bail issue. Now, here in Multnomah County, it doesn't seem to me like the lack of or the reduction in the use of cash bail has led to criminals roaming the streets and the purge taking place. Well, it seems to be a pretty nice place around here. It doesn't seem like we've got Multnomah County prosecutors clamoring for more use of cash bail because it's the only way they can get people to show up for court. Doesn't seem to be happening here. It doesn't seem to be happening in Kentucky, another one of the states that has gotten rid of the for-profit bail and has done a lot of bail reform. So no, I don't believe it. I don't believe that there's nothing that can be done here. I believe a $2 billion industry is lobbying pretty hard to make sure they can keep being a $2 billion industry. That seems pretty effective. Now, the other thing I want to bring up, when he talks about this efficiency of cash bail, is that's irrelevant. How efficient it is irrelevant. You know what would be the most efficient way to ensure someone charged with a crime shows up to court? Assign them a bodyguard who's with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, handcuffed to their wrist, who's holding a gun to their head. Man, I bet you damn near 100% of the people charged would show up to court then. That'd be the most efficient system ever. But it wouldn't be constitutional, it wouldn't be rational, and it wouldn't be just or moral. So when he says that the cash bail is the most efficient system, all I can think is, it doesn't matter how efficient it is. The cash bail principle is that you're innocent until proven guilty, but you're only free if you're rich. The cash bail system says there is some point at which you are so poor, you deserve a cage even if you're innocent. And that's just wrong. It doesn't matter how efficient it is. It's wrong. How much freedom we take from our people should be a very serious undertaking, a very serious consideration, and it should always be the least intrusive reduction in liberty possible, or that matches the totality of the circumstances, right? Yes, having an ankle monitor on you is a bit of an invasion of your privacy and liberty, but not as much as being locked in a 6x9 cage with criminals. There's got to be some point at which we start to recognize that we are punishing people who are being innocent, punishing people who are innocent merely for being poor. And that's just wrong, and it needs to change. Ankle monitors, better supervision, more reform, but it's got to change.
Hey, bud, let's party.
Sounds like a good idea, Mr. Spicoli. It's 420 here in the Pacific time zone. Happy 420, Washington State. We're still cheering for you, and we're still fighting to get you guys home grow and joint sharing and pot lounges. Remember, legalization isn't an end point. It's just the beginning in our journey to true cannabis freedom. We got to take a break, and we'll come back with some Dragonfly right after this.
We have your smoking section right here. This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
The political climate is at a fever pitch, and the fight for the social fabric of America is set for battle this November. Tuesday, November 8th, the Cannabis Liberation Movement takes a huge step forward, and Cannabis Radio is here to chronicle this legendary moment. CannabisRadio.com and the Cannabis Radio News Team will feature wall-to-wall live coverage of all the coast-to-coast voting of state amendments, ballots, propositions, and initiatives that will further progress the Cannabis Crusade. Join us November 8th for Vote 2016, The Path to Cannabis Freedom, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. And we're taking a look now at the pieces I've written up on weednews.co lately about the stoners against legalization. And primarily today, we're looking at one Dragonfly De La Luz. She was one of the high-profile opponents, one of the high-profile marijuana-using opponents of Prop 19 back in 2010, managed to land her mug in NPR. There was a major NPR piece on her back in 2010, spouting much the same rhetoric of how legalization of marijuana leads to takeover by the corporate overlords and the destruction of medical marijuana and more people in prison, etc., etc. She's back, and she's got this blog up now against Prop 64, the California Marijuana Legalization Initiative. Now, when we visited this topic yesterday, her post was entitled "Why California Progressives Are Voting No on Prop 64." And at the beginning of the post, she included a quote from Seattle Hemp Fest founder Vivian McPeak that said, quote, "I thought for decades that legalization meant we would all keep doing what we were doing without fear of arrest or prosecution. I failed to grasp that the powers that be would see it as just another angle from which to gain control and hand opportunity to the wealthiest, most ruthless, and most connected," end quote. Vivian McPeak, executive director, Seattle Hemp Fest. That opens the piece that then continues on for pages and pages and pages about how evil and terrible Prop 64 is and why progressives should vote against it. Vivian McPeak objected to this, saying you're taking the quote out of context because indeed he was talking about Washington's I-502, not Prop 64, and that he hasn't stated a public position on Prop 64, and that he did not appreciate having his words taken out of context regarding Prop 64 and would appreciate removal of the quote. All right, so that's where we were yesterday. Well, today we can follow up on this because number one, she didn't remove the quote. She added to it by putting at the end of Vivian's title a little explanation parenthetical thing that says, referring to Washington's I-502, parentheses. Well, if it refers to Washington's I-502, why the hell is it at the top of a post about California's Prop 64? It would make sense if you were drawing a comparison. If you were saying what happened in Washington is going to happen in California. But she belies that in her own hyperlink that she added to the quote that hyperlinks back to a Seattle Post-Intelligencer op-ed that Vivian wrote saying Washington's legalization was the worst in the nation and other states like California shouldn't copy it. That destroys the point of putting the quote at the top of this piece because, indeed, Prop 64 does not copy it. Does not copy Washington's I-502. So she adds the hyperlink, she adds the little parenthetical, but she leaves the quote up. Now, the other thing that changed today is that she retitled the piece. The piece now is called 14 Reasons Why California Progressives Should Vote No on Prop 64. So that tells us that she's been editing the piece and that she added the hyperlink and the attribution to Vivian's 502 comments means she knows, she's heard the criticism, she's been informed of Vivian's feelings about this and chose to ignore them and to continue on using his name to suggest, to infer, to leave the impression with people that grassroots cannabis activists like Vivian McPeak are opposed to Prop 64. And again, Vivian's point in the op-ed she refers to is that California should not copy Washington. And California's Prop 64, with its guaranteed indoor home grow, with its lower taxes than Washington, with its no state canopy limit like Washington has, with no 5 nanogram per se DUID like Washington has, that will allow pot lounges like Washington doesn't, and that has legal sharing, which Washington doesn't, is far superior to Washington's I-502. So it's not copying Washington. And therefore, having that quote up there doesn't make any sense. And the rest of her piece, the 14 reasons why progressives should vote no, as misinformed as it is, can stand alone without Vivian's quote. Vivian's quote doesn't illuminate the piece any. It just helps to smear the good name of Vivian McPeak. I mean, this is worse than when Donald Trump uses music from Aerosmith or whoever at his campaign rallies, and then they tell him not to, and he keeps doing it. Well, take down the quote. Just take down the quote. And I don't know if this was a change recently or if it was already in the piece, because like I said, it's such a long piece that I didn't read through it all until today. She's got quotes from Vivian all over the piece. I found 6 different quotes. She rearranged the different talking points to match that whole 14 reasons, idea. And at the close, at the very end of the piece, she writes, "It is not incongruent to be for legalization and against Prop 64. Given the growing concern over the worsening drought, it is smart, reasonable, and sensible. As the nation's leader in environmental efficacy, surely California can do much better than Prop 64," and then follows that with the quote from Vivian, quote, "Don't copy us. The legislature might screw it all up and destroy the gains you worked so hard to win, like they've done to us here in Washington," end quote, dash Vivian McPeak. Again, lady, Prop 64 is not copying Washington. And there's a couple other in-betweens in a couple of other places where she, and these Vivian McPeak quotes, again, are linking back to that Seattle PI op-ed that says, don't copy us. So we're not. We're not copying. California's not copying Washington. California would be so much better off than Washington. It'll make your head spin. But again, trying to use facts, science, reason, and logic and journalistic ethics with the stoners against legalization is a fool's errand. And I'm just that fool. Let's get to some of the content, though. Enough that she's smearing Vivian McPeak. That's bad enough, right? But the content. Oh, my God. The despicable, purposefully obfuscating, misdirecting, selectively revealing, and outright bullshitting that she does about California's legalization initiative. And I'm going to go through. She's got those 14 reasons. Get ready, folks, because over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to debunk every goddamn one of them. And here's the first one. One of the reasons you're supposed to vote against Prop 64 is because it's going to create new crimes. New crimes that will lead to greater arrests of cannabis consumers than currently. Now, let me read from her blog. This is what she writes. Quote, Prop 64 ironically creates new crimes that don't exist today and calls for jail time for a host of harmless offenses, including possessing more than an ounce. If you get pulled over with an ounce for yourself and a gram or two for your friend, you will face a draconian 6 months in jail and or a $500 fine under Prop 64. Okay, folks, so let me get this to you, because what she's doing here is something a lot of these stoners against legalization do, because right after she asserts this terrible punishment that's coming out of Prop 64, she cites Prop 64. She copies and pastes from the document, of course, with more boldface underlining and italics added, but she copies from the document from Prop 64, section 11357B. 11357B says, persons 18 years of age or over who possess more than 28.5 grams of marijuana or more than 4 grams of concentrated cannabis, or both, shall be punished by imprisonment in a county jail for a period of not more than 6 months, or by a fine of not more than $500, or by such fine and imprisonment. Oh no, there it is, right there in Prop 64. Right there in Prop 64, it says, get busted with more than an ounce, or more than 4 grams of concentrate, 6 months, $500. It's right there in Prop 64. Here's the problem, Dragonfly. That's not a new punishment or a new crime. That's the punishment and crime now. Let me read you the relevant excerpts from California Health and Safety Code, Section 11357, paragraphs A and C, the law now. Quote, every person who possesses any concentrated cannabis shall be punished by imprisonment in the county jail for a period of not more than 1 year, or by a fine of not more than $500, or by both such fine and imprisonment. Every person who possesses more than 28.5 grams of marijuana other than concentrated cannabis shall be punished by imprisonment in a county jail for a period of not more than 6 months, or by a fine of not more than $500, or by both such fine and imprisonment. In fact, when you compare the two, today's law versus Prop 64, the punishment for over an ounce of marijuana stayed the same, but the punishment for concentrates was reduced, and the amount you could have was increased. Again, the law now, quote, any concentrated cannabis, end quote, is 1 year and $500. Under Prop 64, quote, more than 4 grams of concentrated cannabis, end quote, 6 months and $500. Went from a year to 6 months, fine stayed the same, and your limit went from zero to four. The law isn't a new law, but the only new part about it actually reduced concentrate punishment. So that's typical. That's typical of these people. Whenever these people, these stoners against legalization, tell you Prop 64 is going to do X, Y, or Z if you're caught with PD or Q, ask them, what's the penalty for that now? Oh, well, if you have a medical card, not medical. We're talking legalization. What's the punishment now? Let me give you another example. She's trying to scare college-age young people that passing Prop 64 is going to subject them to greater risks and punishment thanks to another new crime. I will quote for you. Quote, under Prop 64, even sharing any amount of cannabis would be a crime punishable by jail for teens and young adults aged 18 to 20, even though it's not a crime today. Young people in this age group, which includes most college students, will face up to 6 months in jail and a $500 fine for engaging in one of the most common and harmless pastimes California indulges in, simply sharing a joint together. Adults 21 and over who pass a joint to another college-age adult under 21 face the same steep penalty. End quote. Well, that sounds pretty scary. Currently, under California Health and Safety Code, as summarized by Normal, quote, a gift or mere transportation of 28.5 grams or less of marijuana is a misdemeanor punishable by a fine of up to $100, end quote. So the current law is that it's not a crime, it's an infraction. Well, it's a misdemeanor. It's one of those non-arrestable misdemeanor things, so it's technically a crime. So the part where she says it's not a crime today, not accurate, but I'll let that slide. So it's a $100 basically appearance ticket that you get. $100 if you pass a joint, joint being less than 28.5 grams. So if Prop 64 is taking that and rising that up to 6 months in jail and $500 and a misdemeanor, well, she's right. That's outrageous. That would be terrible to take to make joint passing go from a $100 ticket to a $500 6 month in jail misdemeanor. That's unconscionable. Except, of course, Prop 64 doesn't do that. Let me show you. Let me uncover the sinister and shady way she's trying to scare college students. She cites the text of Prop 64, Section 11360, paragraph A, which states, in part, quote, except as otherwise provided by this section or as authorized by law, every person who gives away marijuana shall be punished as follows. Persons 18 years of age or over shall be punished by imprisonment in a county jail for a period of not more than 6 months or by a fine of not more than $500 or by both such fine and imprisonment. Oh, see? Person reading her post is going to go, there it is, right there, right in there, Prop 64, Section 11360A, 18 or over, sharing weed, 6 months and $500. Here's the problem. She fails to include the following paragraph B, quote, except as authorized by law, every person who gives away not more than 28.5 grams of marijuana is guilty of an infraction misdemeanor and shall be punished by a fine of not more than $100, end quote. Did you follow that? Dragonfly cites a paragraph A that begins with, except as otherwise provided in this section, and then omits the very next paragraph B that is provided in this section. She runs with the paragraph A that tells her audience that sharing a joint is going to be a 6 month $500 misdemeanor, and then omits the paragraph B that says for amounts below an ounce, a joint, the law stays exactly the same as it is today. So, either Dragonfly De La Luz is one of those people that Stoners Against Legalization keep telling me can't possibly read and understand a whopping 62 pages of confusing legalistic jargon, or Dragonfly De La Luz understands it quite well and is purposely propagandizing young cannabis consumers to vote against their own self-interests, maintain their own criminality, and most important, keep the status quo for greedy prohibition profiteers. You wanted my attention, Dragonfly? You got 100% attention. This is some verified U.S. grade A Stoners Against Legalization bullshit. Be right back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com. earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Previously on the Stoner Jesus Show.
St. Paul's doing good work.
It's my Greg here, Poontang, if I can use a medical term.
Yes, the New England Medical Journal.
Oh, my God.
That's right. Well, you can call me Dr. St. Paul now.
Dr. St. Paul.
I don't think I will.
No. You wouldn't even qualify to be a vet.
I'm a special kind of vet. I make them less lonely.
The Stoner Jesus Show. Live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Or find the Stoner Jesus Show podcast on demand at CannabisRadio.com and StonerJesus.net.
Peace, bitches.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Hey, I just posted in our chat room some resources for you. A couple of graphics. Hope you can pass them around in your Facebook feeds and Twitter and blogs and all that kind of stuff. One of them is a JPEG of Normal's chart of what California law is right now. California Health and Safety Code for marijuana, possession, cultivation, trafficking, sales, all that kind of stuff. It's a great resource. When someone tells you that Prop 64 is creating some new law or some penalty, you can just go look at this and find out, well, what's the penalty for that now? And that's the thing, is these people, one of their scare tactics, one of the ways that they like to fool people is by exploiting one of the properties of writing laws. And that is that sometimes you have to restate what the current law is. Laws aren't never deleted. Right? They're amended. Okay? So there are currently laws on marijuana in California for all various sorts of things. So when you write a legalization initiative, and in a section of a legalization initiative, you make a segment of that marijuana use legal, you still have to state what happens when people are outside of that segment of marijuana use. And that involves oftentimes restating what the current law is. Maybe it moves from one paragraph to the other and has to be renumbered or something. But a lot of times initiatives contain text that is part of the current law. And most states have a way of delineating that within the text. It's sometimes, if it's new text being added, it's italic. And if it's old text that's been deleted, it's got a strike through. Some states do it with all caps, or some states do it with bold facing, but there's usually a way to tell which parts are the new parts being added and which parts are the law that's just being restated. So they'll find something like, well, you know, if you're caught with more than an ounce, you get 6 months and $500 fine. And they'll say, look, it's in Prop 64. They're making a crime. No, they're just restating what you'd get busted for now if you were driving around with more than an ounce on you. And I had a guy the other day that was on Twitter, maybe it was, who was telling me that because of that, the people that regularly drive around with more than an ounce will be filling the jails. And I just got to thinking, it's like, first of all, who are you people that are regularly driving around with more than an ounce on you? And don't give me the, oh, a medical marijuana patient. Like, right, okay, I get that. You need more as a patient. But regularly driving around? Like, I can see the deal where you've got to go to your grower, pick up your harvest, and it's a half pound or a pound or whatever, and drive it back home. Sure. But regularly? You're always driving around with 4 ounces or a pound or whatever? Just in case, what? The zombie apocalypse takes place. There's a big electromagnetic pulse. Nothing works. Society crumbles. And you got caught on the side of the freeway. But thank God, at least you got your pound of weed. Is that the reasoning here? I don't know. Who is this that's driving around regularly with more than an ounce? I don't get it. Well, people selling, I guess, might be driving around regularly with more than an ounce. And the other part of that that is logic defying is that if that's a crime now, which it is, driving around with more than an ounce is a crime in California. Less than an ounce is infraction, decriminalized. But right now, it's a crime driving around with more than an ounce. Misdemeanor, 6 months, $500 fine, just like it would be under Prop 64. So why aren't the jails filling up now with those people driving around with more than an ounce? In fact, it would be easier to catch them now because you can use a drug-sniffing dog and you can, any amount of weed you see or paraphernalia you see is reason enough to start the search. It should be easier to catch those people driving around with more than an ounce right now. After Prop 64, and you can legally have up to an ounce, and the drug dogs have to be retired because they can't smell weight, it'd be easier to get away with driving with more than an ounce, wouldn't it? There's no logic here, folks. There's no logic. It's just rent-seeking, prohibition, profiteering, propagandizing is what it is. It's people that got an invested interest in the status quo of keeping marijuana in California just illegal enough to be worth $300 an ounce and sell for $1,200 a pound, and just legal enough that they don't really have to worry about the cops. They like that. If you are a bag slinger, the situation in California right now is perfect for you. No taxes, no regulations, no oversight, no inspections, no licenses, no regulations. You just get to grow your weed, harvest it, cure it, throw it in a bag, sell it to people at the cost of saffron. Have I told you guys the saffron analogy yet? I'm sure I've said it before, but maybe some of your new listeners. The most expensive vegetable matter you can buy that isn't an illegal drug is saffron. Saffron's a spice. And saffron is a very difficult spice to harvest. The saffron is the three stamens of the crocus flower, a certain crocus flower. And these three stamens, the three little threads, right, in a flower, and they have to be hand-plucked. There's no machinery for processing saffron. So there are these fields of crocus flowers that families work hand-picking three little threads out of a flower. Takes 225,000 of these flowers, 225,000 threads to make an ounce, like 75,000 flowers, something like that to make an ounce or something like that. It's a lot. I might be wrong on the numbers there, but it's a lot. So, and the harvest season on this is like only 3 weeks. So you got a 3 week window where these people are working 19, 20 hour days, hand picking three little threads out of a flower to gather up 75,000 or 225,000 of them to make a pound. And this stuff is primarily harvested and grown in Spain and Iran. And I can get an ounce of that shit freeze dried, shipped over for $90. At the Spice House in Chicago, owners Tom and Petty Erd sell a gram of superior grade saffron for $6.79, and an even finer version known as coupe grade, for $8.29. $8.29 a gram with all that effort, and yet you're going to tell me that marijuana should be 10 to 15 a gram? Now, I'm not trying to discount the difficulty in growing fine consumer cannabis. I understand there's a lot of work involved in growing, harvesting, trimming, curing. I get it. But it ain't no 3 weeks, 20-hour days, hand-picking three little threads out of a flower heart, is it? No, it's not. And as our guest Jorge Cervantes said in our Cultivator's Corner in the first hour, somebody who knows far more about growing than I do or just about anyone on the planet, he's looking at commercial wholesale costs for marijuana dropping down to the $200 a pound level. $200 a pound. Wouldn't that be great? Wholesale $200 a pound? That works out. Whoops, did it wrong. 200 divided by 16. There we go. How come my number lock doesn't work when I want it to? Divided by, escape. I was going to do that real quick and slick, and you wouldn't even know I was typing, but $12.50 an ounce. That's what it works out to. $12.50 an ounce wholesale at what Jorge's talking about. Let's have a 100% markup. That's $25 an ounce. Let's have a 400% markup. It's $50 an ounce. I think even with as much as cannabis is going to be sin taxed, and as much as pot shop owners and people are going to want to mark up the price, I think exceeding $50 an ounce once we get the wholesale price down to $200 a pound is a pretty reasonable goal. Should be less than that even. $35 an ounce. Now, let me close up. I had one more quick story I wanted to make sure I mentioned after I got off on the saffron track here. Is the Wall Street Journal has published its take on a new study that has come out that supposedly shows that pot makes you a slacker. In fact, the title of their piece is something like, "Pot makes you a slacker, now there's scientific proof," or close to that. I closed the tab. But anyway, Wall Street Journal goes off on this new study that involved rats. And they figured out which of the rats were slackers and which of the rats were workers, just naturally. You know, this rat, he likes to run the maze and he likes to do the wheel and whatever. And he's a real go-getter. And then the other rat, well, he just, you know, sits around eating cheese and, you know, beating off, whatever. He's the slacker. So they got them all figured out. Here's our team of slacker rats. Here's our team of motivated rats. And then they measured, you know, how often and aggressively they would perform a set of either an easy task or a hard task. And the easy task, they could get like a sugar cube. And in the hard task, they'd get two sugar cubes or whatever. And they come up with the baseline for the slacker group, and they come up with the baseline for the motivated group, right? Then they take these rats and they administer THC to half of them from both groups. Half the slackers are going to get some THC, half the motivated ones are going to get some THC. And they found the rats, regardless of whether they were initially a slacker or a motivated rat, once given the THC, were less likely to perform the more difficult tasks and did so with less enthusiasm. And this, to the Wall Street Journal, is proof positive, that pot makes you a slacker. Now, all sorts of ways we could attack this, but I'm going to start with the most easy one for me. And that is, well, no shit, Sherlock. Think about what they just discovered. They just discovered that if You are high. You want to chill. Really? Wow, that's some great scientific breakthrough there. And let's not even discuss the fact that THC alone, without CBD, is far more psychoactive and yada, yada, yada. If you got active THC in you, you might be less wanting to do mundane tasks, is no big surprise. The question that needs to be answered is whether or not those same rats, after the THC wore off, went back to their baseline. Nobody wants to argue that while you're high, you might be the greatest worker in the world. The point is whether or not if you smoke pot after work and come back the next day, does it affect you? And the answer is no.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Cash?
Sorry.
I don't carry around cash, and I don't want to use the ATM and pay surcharges.
You don't need to carry cash. Haven't you heard about PayQuick?
Okay, tell me about PayQuick.
It's the safe and easy way to pay. It works just like your debit card to securely pay for your purchase, and it gives you rewards points every time you use it.
Nice.
PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQwick.com.
Well, that was a surprise. That's all the time we got for today, but thanks for joining us here on CannabisRadio.com. We are live every Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. For the Russ Belville Show, 2 hours of your latest marijuana news, interviews, data, polls, science, opinion, analysis, and more. Plus your live calls here at 650-LEGAL-MJ, 650-LEGAL-MJ, and it's a voicemail you can call 24/7. Leave a message, we might play it back on the show. I'm in Boston Saturday for the Freedom Rally, and don't forget tomorrow our special guest, former Minnesota Governor The Body, Jesse Ventura. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.